everybody. Welcome to the NFL Roadshow post-draft edition. Lindsay Rhodes here with one of the best draft analysts around, joining me to try and make sense of the three-day affair we just witnessed in Cleveland and what it all means for the season ahead. Super excited to have Charles Davis from the NFL Network Draft Desk on the show. He was on the air for all 259 picks. I've also got another guest joining me after him, the story behind the 255th pick. And one of my favorite moments in the draft, one of my good friends, Shanika Dabney Henderson, who I used to work with at NFL Network. She now works with the Saints, her favorite team growing up, got the amazing opportunity to announce their 7th round pick alongside one of her coworkers. She's so excited, but when it's time and they go to her live on national television, she doesn't have the pick. It's in, but no one tells her who it is. So she is on live TV to announce information that she literally doesn't know, but she handled it beautifully and the pick was made. And as a result, I, as her friend, can now laugh about it. And I hope that she does too when she calls in to discuss what that moment was like. First though, let's get to Charles. It's time to break the huddle. Chuck D, first of all, tip of the cap to you, my friend. You do such a good job on the draft, on everything that you do, but I'm sure that you must be particularly exhausted after this gig, 3 days talking nonstop on like 10 from an energy standpoint. So thank you for delaying your inevitable cocooning that I'm sure is to come in order to come on and talk to me.
Well, thank you. You're so kind, Lindsay. And the best part about it is you've experienced it. You've lived it, you know it. So it's not about me going, oh my God, I'm devastated. I need sleep. Please. We're talking draft picks and football and what have you. Tell that to the men and women that work every day, right? They'll be like, are you kidding me? Were you breaking rocks,
okay,
Davis?
I understand that it's all
Were you breaking
relative.
Rocks? No, you were not. You were sitting there gabbing.
Chuck, stop it. But it's mentally exhausting. I mean, You know, you're studying for months on end trying to get all this information in your brain, and then it moves so fast. And I mean, I was mentally exhausted just from watching and trying to follow along on my computer and get my thoughts together, particularly, holy cow, the second round.
That was
and
wild.
And that pace. And all those trades?
Yeah.
How do you keep anything straight in your brain?
It's difficult. I'm not that smart, and I'm not trying to be self-deprecating, but when you're talking about trades, this team to this team and what it means and backtracking and where that came from and how they may have acquired this pick before and now they're using it for this one. I mean, you know Rich Eisen, he's very good at that. Rich can do the genesis of a trade. And then all of a sudden he ties it back to, you realize that person now is the pick that they acquired for what?
Right.
How did you do that? You know? And so that's pretty amazing. But when you see some of them you see coming, some of them, when they hit you in the face, you're like, clarity. I know who they came for. And some of them you get fooled on. I mean,
do you have that clarity later in the draft? Because I feel like, okay, so when the Bears move up to 11, right? You go, okay,
easy.
This is Fields.
That was easy, right? Right? We all knew that.
And we've all, I put myself, like all of us are sitting at home drafting. But like, you know what
it's
I mean?
True,
people who
though.
Have done a mock draft, you do the first round, you kind of figure out where the trade points might be.
Yep.
But once it gets to that second round and everyone was trading.
Yeah,
all of those picks were flying.
Everybody got involved.
I don't know who's left. I don't know where what's what. Like my strategy's out the window. And you guys don't have any time in that situation because picks were piling up to hypothesize very much. Like, well, they really need an offensive tackle, and I don't know if they're going to be able to get one. Like, you don't have time to have those kinds of conversations.
That's true. And frankly, I think that's probably good in a lot of ways, Lindsay, because – we've all been waiting for how many months for that event to take place, right? To me, the run up for the draft. Now, look, a lot of people out there who are listening and watching us, at this time, they've been doing this all year long. You know that, I know that, and I actually love the people that do it because they're involved, right? So they've doing it year round. But for us, the run up really begins January. You know, because I'm calling games, when my last game ends, that's kind of when my attention turns to the draft. So it's East-West game, Senior Bowl, Combine, draft. So by the time we get there, I'm good with not having a lot of commentary between picks. Let's let them reveal. And I really think a lot of people at home are ready for them to reveal as well. You know, I mean, the league does a great job making it a show. And here comes, you know, from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for the next pick. I think people at home really at this point are like, that's great that they're doing it. Just go out there and tell us who it is.
Yeah.
And please get like and please get their medium. Name right.
Maybe between like the first round, you know, where there is such a lull between picks. And we all know that the teams are kind of encouraged to maybe not run the pick up.
Right.
Though like the Dolphins at six did not heed that advice.
And we were okay like, with
he's
that.
He's here. Run. Go. Get Waddle.
And we were good with that. But you're exactly right. You know, and this will not be a long history lesson, but we've come so far in this draft. I mean, people don't understand that at one point when George Plimpton wrote the book Paper Lion, which would have been 1963, 64, somewhere in that neighborhood, he was actually asked after he had done his thing with the Lions to be the phone guy for the Lions at the draft. And he was so excited, Lindsay. He's like, this is so cool. This team, the franchise loves me. He said he canceled dinner reservations, a theater night, the whole thing, canceled it all to do it. And later on was like, what did I do? And the draft was 20 plus rounds. And at that time, you got an hour. You ready, Lindsay? You had an hour between picks.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine? And you remember when we were doing it together, when we first started, the first round was 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Before they dropped it down to 10. And it was 15, 10. And I think we didn't get to 7 minutes until day two. And back then it was two days worth. But you see where I'm going with that. So, yeah, I'll take the dizzying pace anytime.
What is your process on the desk? How do you organize your information? Do you have, like, notes in front of you? I know you have a computer open. I know you're not on social media. Yeah, so I assume that you're not following along on Twitter or anything like that. What do you do?
I have the computer open because I have the depth charts for all the teams currently.
Oh, okay.
You know, post free agency. As they're constituted, because my job, as I see it, is to kind of fit in what that draft pick means. Daniel Jeremiah is going to know everything about the draft pick and break it down left and right, and he'll know where they fit and why. And I will have to, you know, my thing is kind of to play off of that. They needed a running back, this fits, or, you know, they need a tight end, but they took a running back. Well, here's why. This guy's in the last year of his contract. This guy's coming off of an injury, you know, that sort of a thing. So that's why the computer's there. And I'll have, you know, a few extra notes beyond that. But for the most part, by then, the name triggers, as far as I'm concerned. That's how it works for me. If you just give me the name, that triggers me to go, oh, yeah, Southern Mississippi, blah, 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 blah. But if I don't have the name, then I might be in trouble.
So you don't have like notes on all the guys in front of you. You're pretty much just going from memory by the time you sit down at that desk.
By the time I sit there, I've gone through the process a number of times, and I'm not saying I can't get to notes because I can. That's not my point. But what I've learned is, like calling a ball game, if I don't have it and they're coming to me and I'm scrambling to get the notes, I'm behind. I'm too late. Right. My example has always been open book tests in school. Remember the first time they told you got an open book test and you thought this is the greatest thing in the world? And then you realize if you didn't know where to get the info, it's a waste of time. And that's how you have to, you still have to study. So
how do you avoid tipping the pick? Do you ever find out ahead of time?
And rarely.
I'm sure Rich must, right? Because Rich, I know, is on social media. I know that especially on day two, he must have seen some of the picks that were coming up before they were actually announced.
Yeah, I'm sure he was, but God, you remember when we went through that? We went through that time frame where everyone was fighting to get the pick out before anyone else.
Yeah.
And we would announce the pick 5 minutes before the phone call came and the kid in the green room and all that.
Yes.
And we all realized we're killing the moment. It's bad TV.
Yeah.
It's bad TV. So even if Rich knows, he's a pro, he's not going to tip it. If Daniel gets information from a GM or someone, he's not going to tip it. If I occasionally get something where they tell me, hey, be on the lookout for this, we don't tip it. Now, when back in the day when we were all in the business of trying to be out in front, everyone was trying to do that. Hey, who you got? I'm so glad we don't do that anymore. I think it ruins the moment for everyone at home and it ruins the moment for those kids getting picked.
Well, and if it's information that you got ahead of time, like I think, then I think that that's fair for you to hypothesize. Yeah. I could see it going in this direction. Definitely. Without just saying like, hey, I talked to someone and I know it's going in this direction. And then yes, that's fair. But yeah, legitimately tipping, like the pick has been made, it is out on social media. Have you ever seen it while you're still having to have a conversation and had to pretend yes, like you didn't know?
Yes, absolutely. And what you try and do is exactly as you said, Lindsay, your process at that point is, I can hypothesize about certain positions, certain things, but I make sure I do like two or three, you know, like I don't go, you know, I really think offensive line would be a place here.
Yeah, right.
You know, offensive line.
They're drafting a long snapper. You're like, I don't know, corner, yeah, offensive tackle, long snapper.
Long snapper. Like, what? What? Where'd that come from? Yeah, you're exactly right. So you're trying to do it right, and you're trying not to be obsequious, condescending, any of those things as well. But you want to make sure it's legit what you're putting out there, because it could very well have been those positions.
It's interesting too, for me, you guys must tonally, I know that there's probably an attempt on your part to be positive all the time. Yes. That's your nature in general. But purposefully, this is, you know, you don't want to, you're in a position where you definitely don't want to rain on anyone's draft moment or anything like that. No. And it's so hit or miss. That guy might end up being an all pro. You don't want to be the person who's like, that's an awful pick right after they're taken. But I think it's funny because I went and did a first round reaction podcast immediately after.
Okay.
And after I was done taping it, I realized I focused on all the things that didn't go the way I thought they mm-hmm, should have, mm-hmm, you know, which is, I think, human nature.
It is.
You're like, I didn't absolutely like that pick, and I thought that strategy was awful, and where are they going to get an offensive tackle now? Right. They didn't take one early. And so it felt very negative in reaction. And I thought, boy, I hope that, because it's never about the player,
yeah,
so much as it is value and strategy and working the board and filling teams' needs. Sometimes, I suppose, for people like yourself or Daniel Jeremiah, you might just not like the player after watching the tape and right, think it's a bad pick. But for the majority of us, and I think Mac Jones is a perfect mm-hmm, example, right? Mm-hmm. Mac Jones at 15 is like, well, good for them. Mm-hmm. But at 3, we were about ready to like blow up San Francisco.
Great point.
Like, he's still going to be a quarterback in the league. How come it's good here and not good here?
That's a great point. And you know, Lindsay, when you talk about it being negative, I highly doubt that you were negative. I think you were talking in a way that people at home were thinking, you know, that's how people process it as well. Yeah, they get that it's a big moment for the kid. They get that it's a big moment for their families. And I think in most people's hearts, great for them. But mm-hmm, was right, he the right person in that spot for my team?
Yeah.
Is that really where we needed to go? So I think that you're speaking to the people that way. Now, I don't think we're Pollyanna about it, but we aren't going to rain on the kid's parade, as you said. But then we will discuss fit. Did we expect that there? No. Right. And I think our best example in the first round was probably Mayock and the Raiders.
Yeah.
And Alex Leatherwood from Alabama, the right tackle at 17. Uh-huh. Because I think most of us thought defense, 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 because they couldn't stop anyone last year. We knew that they needed offensive line help, but it was a deep draft for offensive linemen. So we thought they'd come and get that later. And so when his name came off the board, and by the way, he's a very good football player. We all know
right,
that. But there wasn't mm-hmm, anyone who thought he'd go before the second round. Like no one, nowhere, no how. So it became a glaring thing. And then we talked to Mike on Sunday. And what I said before then, when he made the pick, it was something we've all talked about. If you have conviction about a guy and he's your guy, it doesn't matter what the rest of the world thinks. Go get it. And we have plenty of examples. Seattle with James Carpenter at guard in the first round. Seattle with Bruce Irvin and outside lineman, everybody lost their mind. Worked out pretty well. Dallas and Travis Frederick, remember that year when they took him at center? Everybody said, you can get him in the third. He became an all pro.
Right. So, just be happy you got him.
Yeah. So sometimes they're not wrong. And you're right about that's what we're all trying to make sure we're communicating. But it seemed odd at that point. And Mike said they had conviction, needed right tackle. But he also mentioned to us, we tried to trade down and couldn't find anyone. So we had to
see that's interesting because that's another point there. And I think that was also,
so that tells you a lot too.
They took him.
Tells you a lot.
Well, but then Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl came out and tweeted yesterday, I think, that there were teams that he talked to that picked right after the Raiders at 17 that were also thinking about taking Leatherwood. So it's
you never those know.
Are that's information we don't always find out on right. the back end. So we can say, oh, you took him too early. You could have totally grabbed him in the second round. But this is an instance where we have found out mm-hmm. that they wouldn't have been able to take him in the second round. So often we don't find that information out.
So
we're just left guessing about whether or not it was a good value pick or not. And then also when they got Trevon Moehrig in the second round.
Pick 43.
Then you go, if they'd flipped those picks,
we would have thought everyone would have been happy. Home run.
Everyone would have been happy. So whatever, who cares? They got both of them.
They got both of them. You know, it's almost like the old Seinfeld. It's almost like a bizarro world pick.
Right.
You know, the absolute opposite of what you expect, but you just nailed it, Lindsay. If Trevon Moehrig goes at 17, okay, I get that. That makes sense. Right. This kid's got first round grade on him. And Leatherwood goes second. We thought he'd go in the second round.
Yeah.
Hmm. Way to go, Mike.
Look at them nailing it.
Way to go, right. Raiders. But because exactly. of the flip, and just as you said, they still got them both. And the best part about Moehrig, they didn't even have to manipulate. They just stayed where they were, yeah. and he came to them.
Well, I thought that this draft was very interesting in the number of names that I thought would go much earlier than they did that ended up falling to mm-hmm. teams and ended up being great value picks. I mean, teams like the Browns could clean up because they didn't have all of these glaring needs. And so they could just take a JOK when he fell. And you're like, oh my gosh, the Browns crushed it. And they didn't even have to maneuver, which right. is obviously they're in a position of luxury in that they don't have a lot of holes and they can just take whoever's best available, which I think is a funny draft phrase because only the teams that don't need things can afford to just take best available across the board. But one of the things that stood out to me about this year's draft was how different teams' boards ended up being, yeah. it seemed, from the big boards that we saw from draft evaluators. It felt like there were lots of players that went in order that we weren't expecting with regard to their specific position. Did you feel like there was less groupthink in this year's draft than we typically see? And do you think, if the answer is yes, that it was related to the pandemic and the lack of like a combine and those sorts of group evaluation periods?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Yeah.
And the other part that I would add to it, Lindsay, is it felt like, how do I phrase this correctly? Only known quantities were being selected. And what I mean by that is you always have a known quantity. You've done scouting. But how many times did you hear in the first three rounds, four rounds, a name that you went, whoa.
Right.
Because either they were a power five, a group of five, or they were at the Senior Bowl. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. They were seen. They were known. People weren't touching the guys or making the big move for, God, I think we were together – Mike Mitchell, Ohio University, second round for the Raiders. We were in New York City, and the whole place went,
huh?
Like, I remember Radio City Music Hall for this reason. There was no explosion. It was, who the heck is that?
It's like silence, and which is the explosion, right?
Right. And everyone on and everyone at the table, because I wasn't there, you know, I wasn't in the first round guy at that time. And it was Mike. And I forgot who else was there, but no one else even knew the guy's name. Oh, and God. Mike said, I got a tip on this guy maybe 2 weeks ago that someone said, you better do homework on it. And Mike was able to get homework done. So he knew him, but only for that reason. He'd gotten almost like, hey, Mike, you better, you know, this Mike Mitchell kid out of Ohio, you done any work on him yet? I don't even know who he is. Well, you might want to check him out because I think that there could be something happening. I mean, that's what it was like. So, but in this one, we didn't have that, Lindsay. I mean, if you go back and look at this draft, you know, and it hurt the small school kids and it hurt the HBCU kids and it hurt all the others because the scouts couldn't get out. So if you can't get out and eyeball them and do all the things you want and all the teams that didn't play and all that, but like a Dylan Raidunt from North Dakota mm-hmm. State,
yeah,
that may seem small school, but they're a power one AA. And oh, by the way, he played in the Senior Bowl. Mm-hmm. Quinn Meinertz from Wisconsin Whitewater got the Senior Bowl.
Star of the Senior Bowl. Right? Hello.
The gut.
That cut off. Yeah.
But people saw him. So now they can truly evaluate him and see that. Like a Mac McCain, who's a corner from North Carolina A&T, who I think is a heck of a player. I don't know that enough people were able to get out and evaluate him and see him. So he doesn't get to, you see what I mean? So that's what I thought happened in this draft. But I think the pandemic ruled a lot of it because now everyone had to say, what's my homework? We all didn't get sit together at the combine and see them all operate.
Who worked the board really well, in your opinion?
You remember Daniel Jeremiah had the great quote that Dave Gettleman will trade out of the first round when they make right turns in NASCAR. And that became one of the great quotes. And I remember when I heard it, I texted him and I was like, you know they have road courses that turn right. And
he knew what he meant.
And he was like, I'm finding out. Because NASCAR came for him. But the best part was Coach Gettleman got the biggest kick out of it. I don't know if you saw his presser. I think you probably did. His presser where he mentioned it.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, he actually had a press conference. He mentioned it. And he said, you know, Daniel Jeremiah, he said, that's a great line. And that great Massachusetts accent of Coach Gettleman's. But he went on to say, everyone asked me about trading out of the first round. I've never done that because I'm not about to be fleeced. Well, this year, for the first time ever, he traded out of the first round.
Yeah.
But he ended up getting Kadarius Toney, which is another weapon for Daniel Jones. So he didn't get fleeced. So it worked for him this time. I thought.
Well, he got a lot for the pick.
And he did it. He traded down twice, multiplied picks, got a really good draft. And I like what they did with their draft. I like the players. They still ended up getting the edge rusher and Ojulari. I mean, everything really worked well. I really thought that the Jets did an excellent job in understanding that they needed that guard or that offensive lineman for the young quarterback, came back at 14 and got him, and then had a decision to make at 34. Because a lot of us thought the runner at that point, because we thought Javonte Williams, the last big time runner on the board, go get him now. And they had a discussion and decided a receiver was more important. We can get runners later. And then went and got Elijah Moore. That's the second one that I thought did a really nice job. And there was one other that I thought did, Carolina. I thought that Scott Fitterer in his first draft as a GM and Matt Rhule did an excellent job of the trading down and still getting people at each pick that will compete for jobs in Carolina.
And I know you really liked that offensive tackle he took in the third round in Brady Christensen.
I love him. Love him. Absolutely love him. He's, you know, I talk about all the time. In today's football, with these quarterbacks being mobile, but mobile to throw, not always to run, what I call second reaction, third reaction. Joe Burrow's like that. Zach Wilson's like that. We protected Zach Wilson. He gets it. David Bakhtiari could give a master class on it because there's no play that's over with Aaron Rodgers. You know, you do your 3 seconds.
So true.
And you know you bat at least another three to go. You better get the second, third block in. That's what I think Christensen does. And I think he's going to be start day one at Carolina at left tackle. I think he'll beat out Greg Little for that spot.
Talk about the value there.
How huge
they get
is
out
that?
Of that pick?
Third round, get that. And they got a backup runner for Christian McCaffrey. Because he does, as great as he is, he can't keep touching it 400 times.
Yeah. Well, and obviously there's some injury concerns and whether he can stay on the field. So that's a smart pick anyway.
Great pick.
I loved what the Vikings did at the top of the draft too. I know they ended up with a huge haul, and volume is always good in a draft, right? Because you can hit or miss and the odds go up that you're going to hit on more of them. But sitting at 14 could have taken Elijah Vera Tucker or Darisaw and no one would have blinked, but they traded back and added extra picks, two of them, 66 and 86. And then as luck would have it, one of those guys that I wanted them to take at 14 was still sitting there at 23 in Darisaw. So with the 14th pick, they essentially got a starting tackle in Christian Darisaw and arguably the best guard in the draft in Wyatt Davis at 86. And then they could afford to take a swing at quarterback in Kellen Mond and see what happens there. And it kind of doesn't even matter because that's an extra pick that you just gained, you know? So from a pure working the board situation, I just loved what they did there.
I love that. And let me throw something at you. At 14, what if they had taken Jalen Phillips there?
Okay.
You see where I'm going with this? Because later in the draft, how about this, who they ended up taking? Patrick Jones, defensive end, Pittsburgh. If you look at body type, that's a very similar body type to Danielle Hunter. If you look down there and look at Jadarius Robinson in the fourth round from Florida State, again, long, lean, sprinter type body type, another defensive end taken there. And then finished it up with Jalen Twyman, the big defensive tackle from Pittsburgh. One thing about Mike Zimmer. I always call it the Zimmercratic oath. First, do no harm to my defense. Totally. Gotta take care of his defense. And they, you know, that defense has been together for a while. So getting Chaz Surratt, the linebacker from North Carolina, to supplement Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr. And Anthony had, you know, injury issues last year. You mentioned Wyatt Davis, a pounder at offensive guard for the run game for Dalvin Cook. Patrick Jones and all that. Cam Bynum, who's a corner at Cal. I think he's going to be a safety. And Anthony Harris isn't there to be the Robin to Harrison Smith's Batman. They're going to need someone to plug into that spot. So Zim still took care of his defense. Mm-hmm. But I'm with you. I think that Rick Spielman did a great job manipulating, getting the extra picks. And Kellen Mond, the quarterback from Texas A&M, he's not there to compete with Kirk Cousins this year. Everyone thinks, right. Oh, God, this is great. I said, no. They needed a backup quarterback. And I go back to years ago when Robert Griffin III went with Washington with all the draft picks and capital. And in the fourth round, they took Kirk Cousins and people lost their mind. Yeah. And Lindsay, I've been wrong many, many, many times. Look, it's not hard to find the tape where I've been wrong about a player or wrong about a pick, all that. Anyone who says otherwise in doing this is you're just setting yourself up for failure because we can find it pretty easily, right?
All right.
I was right on that one. And I jumped on the table because when they took Kirk Cousins, everybody was skeptical. When I say everybody, a lot of people were skeptical. I was like, I think it's a great pick. And they're like, why would that be a great pick? They just took Griffin. I said, because he's better than the backups they have on their roster now, even as a rookie. You need a backup. And that's what Kellen Mond gives you. And if you're a playoff team, don't you need a backup that you think can help you just in case something happens to still have a chance to win, still have a chance to compete? That's what I don't get about people who are playoff teams and your backup quarterback probably can't play dead. So your season's dead and you're just hoping you're Russell Wilson and you never get hurt. And that's just rare in our game.
Well, and also you have to, so you're never drafting that high in the draft and taking a quarterback and presuming that it's hit or miss, right? Like that's not the approach that you're taking. You think that this is a guy who's probably going to be your franchise quarterback, but the odds are some of them won't be. So to back him up with just another option, there are all the reasons you just listed about needing a backup that's good too, but also the chances go up that you might find a starter. And in that particular case, the chances led to Kirk Cousins being the guy that they wanted to move forward with rather than RG3.
Yeah.
Speaking of quarterbacks.
And by the way, and Kirk can buy dinner now. Like, you know, when you hang out with Kirk, he can pick up the check.
Oh, he can pick up a lot of checks. Yes. The Lions, I think, were an interesting one for me because I went into the draft wanting them to embrace the notion of trading back and collecting picks because mm-hmm. I felt like they just needed so much help at so many positions. But when Sewell fell to them at 7, that strategy was out the window. I am a firm believer in building up that offensive line. They get a longtime starter at left tackle there, we think. And I think that's too much to pass up, especially when you're rebuilding. That's the position, like, number one that I would want to start with. I also like their St. Brown pick at wide receiver in the fourth round. Trojan, fight on. Defensive tackles in the second and third. And maybe most importantly for me here, strategically, they didn't take a quarterback. And I like that strategy for them. I love that they're building first, putting all their resources into putting some pieces on the board so that then – when they do draft a quarterback in a few years, maybe even next year, then they can plug that guy in and they're a little bit more primed to be competitive.
I like where you're going with that. And let me try and jump on the bandwagon with you on that. Brad Holmes, the new GM coming in, tough guy. If people never met him and have spent time, I'm not talking about walking to a bar and challenge people to a fight tough. I'm talking mentally tough, astute in his judgments, things with conviction. Understands how he wants to play the game, how he wants his team to look. He's the first time GM, but boy, he spent some time when he's impressive as heck.
Yeah.
They added Chris Spielman. We know what Chris is all about. Man of character, man of conviction. And of course, everything that came near him, he tackled. and you felt it when you played him. You had a coach that, you know, whether you liked the press conference, whether you thought it was too far over the top, whatever you want. The bottom line is if you examine and strip that all the way and examine Dan Campbell as a person, there is a toughness element to him, and that's how his team is going to play. It's not the over-the-top biting kneecaps and all that. It is that ball snapped, people get hit, we're going to move the pile, all that, and that's how he played. And that's how he's going to be. And he has conviction. So this team's being built now in the image of those guys. And that's why I think what you're talking about really, really works for them. Sewell probably good. Look, Taylor Decker, that was a first round pick for to play left tackle. I think he'll probably go to right and Sewell will stay at left. You've just increased your offensive line there. Anzurike in the second round, Aleem McNeil, those are big, strong, physical defensive tackles. Anzurike a little more upfield. Aleem McNeil, try and run the ball. Good luck with that, okay? So I think that that fits really well, and I love what you talked about with Amon-Ra St. Brown because everyone was screaming, get a receiver, get a receiver. Isn't that funny? Because all those years they took receivers first, everybody ridiculed them for it, and now they're like, how come you're not taking a receiver? Well, I think they did really well with the value for Jared Goff. And the guy that I think that got overlooked was the DB from Syracuse, Ifeatu Melifonwu. Because it's going to be fun, interesting to me to hear how they play him. Long, physical corner that looks like a Seattle corner, right? Okay. Big arms, 200-plus pounds. A few years ago, a couple few years ago, they drafted a kid out of Penn State. Amari Aruwariye, right? Same build. Are they going to that type of a corner? Is that what they want? This would be interesting to watch and see what Aaron Glenn puts in on defense.
You know, you mentioned the Lions, people wanting them to draft a wide receiver. The Eagles did draft a wide receiver really early. I have a question for you about him because I know a lot of people really like the pick of Devontae Smith. At that stage in the draft, when I talked to James Jones and he was telling me his thoughts about the different wide receivers in this draft, one thing that stuck with me was that his takeaway about Devontae was that he wanted him to go to a team that had a solid number one, that he thought he would be a really good number two and maybe eventually a number one in the NFL. So when he went to the Eagles, my gut was that's not the team. They don't have any other wide receivers. I mean, they do. But I don't mean to disrespect Travis Fulgham or Greg Ward. But right. So now he is the one.
Yeah.
And I question and I wonder what you think. Can he be a one in a way that will be effective and help them offensively out of the gate in year one?
That's a great question. And I love how James posed that. Thank you for illuminating that, because we're talking about a guy who played the position, understands it as well as anyone, right? And understood what a one looks like, because James wasn't a one, but he was a big time contributor. So he knew what that meant for the rest of them being those guys. What I think about it is, if he develops like Marvin Harrison, and see, that's a big comparison, as we know, that's a Hall of Famer, but the body type is very similar. If he develops like Torrey Holt, another guy that should be a Hall of Famer, body type again, very similar. If he develops like that, he'll be a one. And I think he'll be a legitimate one. The interesting thing for me is there's an air of mystery to him. And when I say that, I mean it this way. You're a Trojan. Remember that big year Marquise Lee had at USC? Caught 117 balls and then the next year, didn't catch as many, but went into the pros. But somehow he was always open. There was a slithery, silky movement to him. You could kick coverages his way, but he always found that hole and then turned it into a big play. I felt the same thing with Devontae Smith. Plus, he's an excellent route runner. So I think he can develop into that. But I like James. I like where James is coming from. It'd be interesting early. How does that play out? Does Jalen Reagor stay healthy and help him? Travis Fulgham was a revelation for them last year, but is he truly a guy? Greg Ward, same thing. You're exactly right about that. But I'll tell you this, the guys that they had with DeSean Jackson, with Alshon Jeffrey, they couldn't stay healthy. They couldn't stay on the field. So you're always waiting for them to come back, but that didn't help your quarterback and your play. You need guys who are out there all the time.
Here was another guy that everyone loved the pick and I had questions about. Rashawn Slater to the Chargers at 13. There were so many comps in the build up to the draft for him to Zach Martin. He was being comped a lot to guards and people that are very high level guards, right? And so worst case scenario, if the Chargers got an all pro guard there, that's a great pick. My question is this: they specifically needed a left tackle.
Correct.
Can Rashawn Slater play left tackle at a high level in the league?
Based on his tape at Northwestern, yes. Now, the issue is going to be arm length. Mm-hmm. And I think his arm length is longer than Justin Pugh's and Robert Gallery when they came out, because that was the deal. Now, you remember Robert Gallery went like top, what, 5 or 6 in the draft? An All-American, a great player. He ended up having his – they moved to guard. And a lot of people, when you talk, you hear people go, Robert Gallery, boy, they wasted that pick. And I said, hold on a second. He had a great career. He answered the bell every week.
Yeah.
Might have gone to a couple Pro Bowls as a guard. But because he was drafted as a left tackle, people saw it that way. Yeah. I think that Rashawn Slater is going to give every opportunity to play left tackle. He has the skill set to do so. And if by some chance he can't survive there, you're exactly right. You kick him in at guard, and I'll bet you he goes to Pro Bowls. I've said that if I were a team and I was in a position where I could get him, which wasn't likely, I would want to think about playing him at center because of his smarts, the Northwestern, as the pivot guy, climbing to the second level. He's a faster Alex Mack to me. And that would have been outstanding, but no one's going to go get a center that high. Right. You know what I mean? But I think that he could be that type of a player. To me, he can play all three positions. I kind of feel like you. Guard is where I know he'll be great. Tackle, I think he can play it. I feel confident he can play it, but he's still got to prove a little bit. That's all. That, you know, I know everybody keeps going to the Chase Young tape. That's one ball game, and he was terrific that night. I get it. And he was terrific a lot of times. But he's got to prove it day after day with these pass rushers. And Justin Pugh ended up moving to guard. Gallery moved to guard. We'll see.
Was there any, I'm kind of putting you on the spot now, and I'm sure there, you know, are so many names. And what were there any, since you were tracking team needs and kind of how people fit in, were there any moves that you expected a team to make?
I expected. Yeah, I'll tell you right off the top. I expected Indianapolis to take a tackle early.
Yes.
I absolutely.
So now they're going to go get Charles Leno Jr.
Maybe.
Because the Bears are cutting him.
You know, and by the way, I think they can live with that.
Yeah.
My thing with them is very simply this. Don't move Quentin Nelson. I know he can play left tackle. I get it.
Leave him where he is. Yes.
Right now, I'd give him
I feel
gold,
the same way.
Right? We're already fitting him for the gold jacket.
Yep. Okay?
Don't weaken it. One of the great things that the Eagles did in their Super Bowl year, Lindsay, was when Jason Peters went down at left tackle, they resisted the urge to move Lane Johnson from right tackle to left tackle. Because if you do that, now you're weakening really two spots.
Yes.
They left him where he was, because nowadays pass rushers come off the right side too. And Von Miller comes from that side, and we go right down the line. And they were playing those people. So they left him there. And you remember that was an all-pro year for Lane Johnson. And they worked their butts off with Halapulavate Vaitai. And he hung in there.
You are coming with the names today, Chuck D.
And he hung in there, and he battled and battled. But they didn't change anything else in the offensive line. And they won the Super Bowl. I thought it was a great lesson. And I just really was surprised that Indianapolis. Okay, I get it. In the first round, you take Kwity Paye. Hard to turn down a great player. Second round, third round, fourth round. They finally took a tackle in the 7th, Will Fries from Penn State.
Yeah.
That surprised me. So I think you're right. I think that they're looking at free agency, who's going to be cut, who's going to be there, and they will find someone. Because Anthony Costanzo was an excellent answer-the-bell first-round guy. Never made a Pro Bowl in his career, but he was competent.
Yes.
Maybe better than competent, but not all-star level. They don't need all-star level. They need good, competent over there, but leave Quentin Nelson alone because they like to run the football. Don't move him.
Well, and so you mentioned Costanzo there, and I mentioned Charles Leno Jr., who the Bears are apparently going to cut because they're bringing in Tevin Jenkins.
Yes.
First of all, I think that that's a mistake because I think, as we saw in the playoffs, you need depth on that line, and I don't know why you would just be like, hey, we're going to give our guys away and not get anything in return for it. Charles Leno Jr. actually graded higher, according to PFF last year, than Costanzo.
Yeah.
So if the Colts wanted to just plug him in, that might be viable.
Oh, definitely. I think you've pointed it out very well. And I think that Chris Ballard, I think that's part of what his draft strategy was. If there wasn't a left tackle there that I liked after taking Kwity Paye, I'll figure this out in free agency. There will be guys who are going to get cut because when you introduce all these new left tackles, people are going to lose their jobs and he's going to find someone.
Ravens needed an offensive tackle too after that trade with the Chiefs. Yeah. And I was a little bit surprised that they didn't get one. And I know there's talk about Al Villanueva possibly signing with them, but I thought, man, they put themselves in a position where he can ask for whatever he wants. And that's not necessarily the type of position you want to be in from a negotiating standpoint.
That's not normal for them in terms of that. Yeah. But I think what they're feeling is going to be is Stanley will come back from injury and play left tackle. And like Chris Ballard, I think that they'll figure that part out on the right side. Because, look, for them, it was an incredible luxury having Orlando Brown on the right side. Because mm-hmm. remember, he turned out to be a steal because he had one of the single worst combine days that you've ever seen. I mean, I don't know that he's finished the 40 yet. but as it's turned out.
Doesn't matter.
He didn't need to finish the 40. He just needed to finish the guy across from him. He's done that quite well. And he played left tackle way better last year than I ever expected. I thought he was a right tackle only, frankly, because of speed and everything else. I was wrong. And now he's parlayed that in a way where he can go play left tackle. And, you know, it's almost a vanity move, Lindsay. You know, you want to be known as the best. To be known as the best in the National Football League, you can be the best right tackle going like Lane Johnson, mm-hmm. you know, when he's healthy. It's the left side that people want to prove themselves. And that's what happened with Orlando Brown. Once he got a taste, he didn't want to go back. Yeah, once he got a taste, he didn't want to go back. I understand.
Well, and he said specifically it was tied to his dad wanting him to play left tackle, and he wanted to fulfill that wish.
Yeah, it's hard to
turn that down. So what's your wind down from the draft look like? Because I know you're a bit of an introvert, mm-hmm. and, you know, those 3 days mm-hmm. at a high energy level might be a lot for you.
You know, I'll walk out of the place before dinner served. You know me. inside joke to but friendship for many, many years. I've got my Madden work to do.
Yeah.
I've got SiriusXM NFL radio once a week that I do. And I'm finished up this last week of Path to the Draft. And then after that, it'll just be Madden and the Sirius radio, and we'll go from there.
So you can't like go hibernate for 3 weeks?
I can't totally hibernate. Yeah. But if I'm just doing my Madden work, which is a couple of days a week, maybe three, there's plenty of time. I'll be able to – I need to work out because I got to lose about 500 pounds and then
– you know. And everyone after this last year of staying at home,
but
Charles, okay?
But it's funny. I've seen some people now because I've gotten my shots, and so I'm out a little bit more. I'm not reckless. Yeah. I'm out more, and I've seen some people, and some of them are, you know, like me. We might need to lose a few extra. And others – have reshaped themselves and look fantastic. Their pandemic was wonderful.
Oh, I hate those.
And boy,
people.
I hate those people.
Charles, you're the best. I really appreciate your time. I know it's been a whirlwind of a week for you. So thank you so much.
Listen, you too. And thanks for, this was fun swapping it back and forth like that. And who did this and who did that? It's always fun to talk with you because you're always ahead of me. So I love that part of it. This is great. But it's great, you know, we're all talking the same language, you know. It's not a question and answer. It's more of a, hey, how did you say it? You know? And that's kind of cool.
You're the best.
Take care.
And coming up, one of my favorite moments in the draft, one that will likely haunt one of my friends for a little while. It's the story behind the Saints' 7th round pick reveal that did not go the way it was supposed to. Coming up next. And we're back with, for me, a very memorable moment from the third day of the draft. It was the Saints' 7th round pick, 255th overall, presented by the Saints' Vice President of Video Production, Shanika Dabney Henderson, and their Vice President of Brand Strategy, Jen Martindale. It is live on NFL Network. It is such an exciting moment for these two women. Big network TV. And here's how it went.
Now, and look ahead that way.
The Saints pick we're going to take live because we're a fan of this person. She used to be. Let's go.
We don't have the pick.
At NFL Network, Shanika Dabney Henderson, along with Jen Martindale.
One, two, three. Don't have the pick, but we got to say something because we're live on TV.
Representing the New Orleans Saints, and on behalf of them, with the 255th pick in the 2020 NFL draft.
Looking off camera, can someone help me out?
Kwon Baker, wide receiver.
Woo! Juan Baker.
That's taking your NFL.
And I love that they just pick up and they just keep going on like that all went exactly the way it was supposed to go. Shanika Dabney Henderson joins me now, my former producer at NFL Total Access. So let's just talk about the irony there of the television producer being put in a position on TV to talk without any information by another television producer who inevitably cuts you. Okay, so anyway, Shanika, we need to talk about what's going through your head in that moment.
Honey, look, there is a reason I am behind the camera, okay? I'm not made for these moments, okay? I'm all
no
about
one's made for that moment.
Scripted content. That's what I'm here for.
Well, the only content you were supposed to provide was the name.
Yeah.
So how in the world we end up in a position where we're going to you and you're like, I don't know the name.
Not nothing. Zero. Zilch. Nada.
So what was the level of frantic panic that was running through your body?
It was level 10. And here's the thing. I feel like I'm pretty quick on my feet typically, right?
Yeah.
So this was a rare moment where I was speechless. Like, I'm like, I literally have no idea what to say. And Jen and I had coordinated.
How is this happening?
She was actually going to lead off because we wanted to make sure we were there on behalf of the women of the Saints front office. And we wanted to acknowledge that because we were so appreciative and still are appreciative of the opportunity to do that and to represent the women of our organization, right? So she was going to kind of make note of that. And then I was going to reveal the name of the pick. And we got nothing. So I just started talking. This was before we didn't know. And I just started talking like as if we were leading into it. And she was talking like with the 200. And at this time, when she's saying that, we still don't know.
No.
So she's saying with the 200.
You're like, I'm running out of words. And there has to be an answer at the end of this sentence. And I still don't know what it is.
God bless Evan Myers, who is in he's on our PR team. He's in the office freaking out with us, mind you. He's lucky enough to be off camera, but he's looking at us like, and frantically texting and doing the things. And so he got it literally, like you could hear him off camera going, come on, Nathan. And then as he says it, then I say it.
So first of all, props to you for being aware enough about the possible names, because someone just whispering to you a name, you're like, I hope I heard that name right. Like, there are a lot of names in this draft. Yeah. If someone had whispered them to me, I would have been like, I need that five more times before I say it live on TV.
Well, thank you, Kawan Baker, for your name being Kawan Baker, because there are much trickier names in the draft that it could have been. Kawan Baker was easy enough to process within the moment. So yeah, that was helpful.
And now you will forever be linked to Kawan Baker.
Yes.
Like, you're the biggest Kawan Baker fan in the world.
For Kawan Baker. We were joking, like maybe he'll be like Marcus Colston, this late pick wide receiver who just becomes like a stud of the organization. I'm his biggest fan. I'm getting a Kawan Baker jersey. I just want to put it into the atmosphere.
Oh, you have to.
I have to. We're forever linked. Like, if he does become this huge star, then I will be a part of his draft moment.
So you're
and
standing
hopefully they
there.
Only show the back end.
Which the Saints did tweet out just the back end. So it was nice and cleaned up. And then you were like, no, here's how it really went. Let's remember the whole thing. Which I love that you can laugh about it. So in those moments where you're waiting and it's coming to you and you're excited and you've got your script and then you realize they are coming to you, but you don't have the pick. You're yelling. You and Jen are both like, we don't have the pick. We don't have the pick. Are you trying to communicate with the television
truck? Yes.
Okay. Well, they didn't hear you.
Right.
Or they didn't care.
Or didn't care. And here's the thing. I'm sure that I know half the people who were in the television truck. So
I'm like, they're like, this will be funny.
Charlie, Mirror, anybody. I don't have the pick.
Oh my God. And then my favorite part is Rich responding. And I don't know if he could hear you or not hear you, but the way it plays out is you say, we don't have the pick. And he goes, let's go.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. It's your turn. figure it out. I'm done talking.
Basically, like, sorry, chick. Deal with it. That was
so
pretty much.
There was like a pause that was about five seconds, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The whole thing, I'm sure. How long did that pause actually feel to you?
It felt like about 10 minutes. Like, I felt like we were frozen for 10 minutes. That's what it felt like. So when I watched it, believe it or not, there was a sense of relief because it felt so much longer than it actually was. I was like, oh my God, we just stood there for minutes and didn't say anything. And then when I saw it, I was like, okay, so it was seconds. Not great, but not as bad as it felt.
It's never as bad as it feels.
No.
That's one thing that I have learned over the years.
Like, okay, maybe I can justify in my brain, like, this is a satellite delay. And, you know, it's just, they haven't heard yet that they didn't get the cue. So that's kind of how I'm, other than that we don't have the pick that made it on air.
If that hadn't happened, that's exactly what we would have all thought. Under the circumstances, we all knew. I think you brought us into that peek behind the curtain actually happened. So what happened after? You get off TV. So I respond to these things one of two ways, right? Mm-hmm. I either walk away and I'm so angry that I can't talk because I don't trust myself to talk. So I'm a very quiet person for a while. Or I do talk and it's the reason I shouldn't trust myself to talk and it's expletive filled. So you get off camera and you're smiling and pause, pause, pause. And now you know you're clear and what happens?
Hysterical laughter. I mean, delirious.
You're so cool.
Delirious laughter. But you have to understand, Lindsay, this is like being on TV is your job, right? So you take it with a sense of like, this is your thing, right? It's your job. So you're going to process it all very differently than I'm going to process it. For me, what the hell am I doing announcing the pick in the draft? First of all, you know what I mean? I'm so excited just to be here that of course, this is how it would go down. Like, this is my life. There's no other way. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know what little monkey wrench would be thrown in, but just based on the trajectory of my life, it was going to happen. So I am, Jen and I are both in shambles. We're laughing so hard. A friend of hers sent her the clip. I don't have the pick made it on air, by the way. So we watch it and then we see us both going, we don't have the pick, we don't have the pick. And then we're both like almost in tears. We just collapsed into the wall laughing. I thought it was the funniest thing ever, to be honest with you. And again, I was so grateful just to be there, like just to be a part of it. And I felt like it made it more memorable for me. Like it was totally a funny, like goofy, whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
You need a t-shirt that says we don't have the pick with his face on it.
Definitely. Trademark. We don't have the pick. Totally.
That is hilarious. So tell me this. Did you go home and run through it in your head about how it should have gone?
The only thing, like I said, that I regretted was because we were thrown off our game is not acknowledging the women of the front office, because that was so important to us. We were talking about it, like just waiting for it to get to round seven. We were both talking about like making sure we scripted it out so that we knew we had that moment to acknowledge all of the amazing women who work in our organization. And I also wanted to kind of sneak in like, and like little girls at home, like I'm thinking about
that whole part of it. Let's do it. Let's do it, Shanika.
Oh, is this it? Do I get to reenact?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, so I'll pretend to be rich, okay? We're gonna take the Saints pick live because we love Shanika Dabney Henderson, who used to work with us at NFL Network. So Shanika, take it away.
Rich, on behalf of the New Orleans Saints and all of the women of the Saints front office and little girls, including in my hometown in New Orleans, who are watching this and might see themselves in me, I am thrilled to announce that with the 255th pick in the 21 NFL draft, the New Orleans Saints select Kawan Baker, wide receiver, South Alabama.
We have the pick, and that presentation was amazing.
You know, I'm ready to bring it. I was so ready to bring it. I brought something completely different, a very different energy, but it's all good.
I'm with you, though. I think the best way to handle it is to laugh it off, and I do think that sometimes those things actually it ends up being better that it didn't go the way that you wanted it to go, because it is way more memorable and it's just so funny for all of us that know you for sure.
Well, look, my mom gave the most like mom response to it. And she was like, but people will remember yours.
You're like this year's orangutan.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. People will remember mine. So who's watching the seventh round anyway? But like, for those who did, for those soldiers, those purists, I gave them a moment. And I'm proud of that. That's something to be happy about. Yeah. I'm
proud of you, Shanika. Congratulations.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you.
So funny. And we will have lots more on the draft coming up later in the week. We're taking a look at the way things went down with someone who has sat in the decision-making chair for a number of drafts, including a few for Shanika's Saints. We're talking to former general manager Randy Mueller on Friday, and I'm very much looking forward to getting a front office perspective on the moves that were made and the way that the board ended up falling. And again, that's coming up on Friday. So have a great week. We'll see you then.